Okay, it is now Monday morning, the 16th of November, and it's 2015, and the whole country is shaking, and I'm shaking longer than anyone else in this room, because at 5:30 this morning, at 5:25, before the minion began, so dominating next to me is a very famous radio TV personality, Chaim Ben-Dor, the economic expert. You hear him on Reshet Bet every morning, occasionally on the TV. So Chaim says to me, did you hear the news? I say, no. Well, anything new? I heard 5 o'clock. I didn't hear anything shocking. He says that murderer from Friday, Rafi Huvava, the murderer from Friday gave himself up because his father was worried the house would be blown up. And now imagine the Supreme Court, what went on, how they said not to blow up the houses, and they delayed it, and they had to hold a session. And Miriam Na'ar threw out a bereaved mother whose son was killed because he spoke up in court. She will not tolerate embarrassment. And you see, it's exactly what the army told her. The blowing up of a house deters murderers. And if Rakefet had his way, we would overlook civil rights in this case. When we're fighting a war, the army has to do what it has to do. B'milchama kabo b'milchama. And that is the Torah approach. If you're familiar with the Gemara, with Bezman Nuchama, with the Netziv, in Hemek HaMektava, twice in Bereshit and in Devarim, he develops the same idea. And that's the Torah approach, period. But wow, what a lesson. It's headlines now, and I saw it in Yisrael Hayom, and I heard in the news now, it's on other newspapers too. Okay, now, last week, the shiur was divided into 3 parts. The first part was, we finished up with the Yechidut, with the Rebbe, and we dealt with that beautiful interview. This person finally gets to the Rebbe after getting out of Russia, and it's overwhelming how he tells the Rebbe, I took out my tefillin, took out a Sefer Torah, and the Rebbe says to him, why didn't you leave it behind? Interesting, that interaction, that interplay. Then we paused for a moment, and I said some words before we go into the issue of feminism. I said some words about the problem with women rabbis. I'm in a state of shock because what I said in class turns out to be totally prophetic. I mentioned as a sideshow that getting a woman rabbi standing up in the middle of davening and speaking, it's a big problem for me. And among the problems, I mentioned the fact that a woman is a woman, a man is a man. Thank God for that, or we all wouldn't be sitting here. The Midrash Rabbah that I quoted yesterday and quoted years ago in great detail says it 100%. And I said, you know, a 32, 35-year-old woman is going to get up, men are looking at her. I don't know how tzniustic that is. Well, this was sent to me, the Times of Israel. Can anyone tell me what the Times of Israel is? Is it just a website or is it a newspaper? And what is it? Just a website. And here's an article by Avi Lieberman about Orthodox congregation hires woman clergy and she's, and I won't read the rest of it because my mouth doesn't, I don't want to talk lewd concepts. Eitz Chaim, Eitz Jacob, Eitz Yaakov Synagogue became one of the first female synagogues in California to hire a female clergy member. Michelle Lerner, while not ordained as a rabbi, will be titled Moratenu, translated as our teacher. The controversy is not so much in Lerner's hiring, but as other synagogues have also hired women clergy, but in Lerner's looks, and I can't read the next line, 19-year-old Josh Blum stated, I skipped the line, stated, she can teach me anytime. And then it goes on, I'm not reading the whole article, I can't read the pornography. Married couple David and, is this a pornographic website? No. Okay.
Are you joking us now?
What do you mean?
So you can't have a pretty woman as a teacher?
Yitzchak, I'm reading.
I think kids will get excited and say, I'm on any.
Married couple.
What should you do? Hide in a closet?
Yitzchak, why can't you have insight into what a shul is about. You were a rabbi. Married couple, David and Marina Krinsky, had mixed feelings about the hiring. David being more positive, "I'm really looking forward to seeing her speak." Hearing her speak. You know what I mean. Marina, while glaring at her husband, had this to say: "My husband is an embarrassment, and I'm sure she's very smart, blah, blah, blah." In my humble opinion, a woman speaking before Musaf, in front of a Kehila on Shabbos, is a breach in Kritzot. It's a breach in Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. And Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, would be 100% opposed. And I am no smarter and no more humble than my Rebbe. I can't believe it. That's the article sent to me as a result of last week's lecture. Now, Yitzchak, let her teach biology, let her teach chemistry. Believe me, when you have teenagers with hormones, she better dress down. Okay, let's not overplay the state of the Baruch Hashem. Thank God that sex is here. Or we wouldn't be sitting here. Or I wouldn't have the Shabbos. I had a lot of nachat. We had a kiddush, and I told you, in honor of the Chatan, my grandson. So I had children there, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And no grandfather was happier than to see his great-grandchildren look at him with joy, sabu, wave to me. I pulled candy out of my pocket. I've learned the tricks, believe me. I also want to mention, I got two copies of this by Rabbi Karupkin. Rabbi Daniel Karupkin is an interesting individual. He's rabbi of what very well may be the largest Orthodox synagogue outside of the state of Israel, could be in the whole world. It's the Bayit in Toronto. The Bayit is something you have to experience to understand. It has over 1,500 members, I believe. 99% are religious Zionists, real Shomrei Shabbos. It's an experience. Now, the rabbi who built it was Rabbi Taub. He lives in Israel today. They had a hard job finding someone to succeed Rabbi Taub. And Rabbi Karupkin was previously in Los Angeles. He translated the Kuzari into English, the Feldheim edition. It's very good. His sister had been my student in Machon Gold. And he went out to Toronto. He's an interesting fellow. He's a Near Israel graduate who has broadened. I hope he doesn't broaden as much as Rabbi Dov Lipman, but he has broadened. So he was he wrote an article, "The Most Open Orthodoxy of Them All," and he compares the Kinas Shluchim to the RCA. And he's critical of the RCA. The Kinas Shluchim was filled with outreach and love for every Jew. And the RCA is involved in a tremendous battle with Chovevei Torah. I just want to say this criticism is unfair. What's unique about Chabad, and this is because it's Chabad, the way Chabad is structured, no balabas is going to tell a Chabad rabbi, take the machitza down. No balabas is going to tell a Chabad rabbi, give a woman an aliyah. No balabas is going to tell a Chabad rabbi, give in to the New York Times, feminism, and Obama. When you come to Chabad, you know in advance the shul belongs to the shaluach. You come, you can be a Mahalo Shabbos, Oakland, the Velet, and Treifet, you can do every sin under the book, but you're not going to tell the rabbi to sin. It's a different atmosphere. RCA is caught up in tremendous problems. Balabatim oppressing the rabbis. Look, they have a woman rabbi. They have women saying Sheva Brachas. They have a woman Misaderet Kedushin. Why can't we? Why can't you be Martin? When you go to a Chabad shul, you know the rabbi is a Chabadnik, with all that implies. Martin? Perhaps. Not Martin? Whatever your viewpoint is. But you're going there because you understand in this shul, he's the rabbi. You have no say on religious matters. What we rabbis have gone through in the field, I don't have to mention in my time, in Yitzchak's time, and it continues until today on a different level. So it's not fair to criticize RCA. At a certain point, you have to take a stand and say the halacha cannot tolerate this. In addition, I mentioned last week about other rabbeim, they turn in every religious act to a... a movie. Everyone comes, benches are set up. To watch the Rebbe light Hanukkah candles, and they sing songs, and it takes an hour and a half. It's recorded, and the Rebbe does this, the Rebbe does that. So I said, in Chabad, you don't find that. So a dear student, Rabbi Yoshua Grinstein, sent me many links to watching the Rebbe. And I watched some of them this morning. I love to watch the Rebbe. It's just a sight, because I know all the people around him. There's Rabbi Krinsky, there's Rabbi Klein, there's Rabbi Groner, there's Rabbi Chodakoff. These are great, great people. I still stand on my point. Yes, Hasidim love to see the Rebbe. There's beautiful movie clippage of the Rebbe walking to his house alone and Hasidim hiding behind cars, staring at the Rebbe. Yes, you can't help it. But even when they knew a crowd is going to come, they watched the Rebbe burn chametz. They watched the Rebbe daven. They watched the Rebbe take lulav and etrog. But it never turned in. Hanukkah candles and Chabad took the Rebbe 5 minutes. It didn't turn into an hour and a half. Burning the chametz, the Rebbe comes out, the Rebbe burns the chametz, the Rebbe says kol chamiya, he's holding an ancient looking siddur, Hasidim is standing around, he waves to everyone, they break into a niggin, he leads them, walks back in, that's it. So I still stand on my point. But if you want to correct me and feel I'm wrong, my greatest pleasure and honor, correct me gladly. Okay? Now, the story of that individual that the Rebbe was sent to, Zerubbabel, Yaakov Zerubbabel, and telling him he had a dream and he should be come back to his roots, that story continues to draw attention. And here's another source where another Chabotnik verifies the story and that it was Ein Hakinami, Yaakov Zerubbabel. And if anyone wants that, they can take it later. And then we ended off the class with the whole, and that's the heart of today's class, of course, the whole challenge of feminism. So I made the point last week, and it's a very important point. I stick to it. It's a result of being a Talmud of the Rav. It's a result of Rav Chaim Brisca. It's a result of dialectical thinking. What's fascinating is both the Rav and the Rebbe were very attuned to the challenge of feminism. See, the Haredi world doesn't face the same challenges. Although in the state of Israel, I have to be honest, in the last election, for the first time ever, you had a party of Haredi women running for office. They attracted under 2,000 votes, which of course are wasted in the Israeli system. But it was fascinating to see their platform, to hear them speak. And by the way, these were not Americans. Generally speaking, wherever you have feminists, they blame the Americans. These were not Americans. These were born and bred Israelis. And they made certain points that are earth-shaking, that I hope the rabbis are listening. It's a very simple point that none of us knew before the election. The life expectancy of Haredi women is less than all the other women in Israel. Out of tzniut, they don't talk about certain illnesses such as breast cancer, and they have a terrible problem with breast cancer and other forms of cancer, which they're not educated how to watch for, how to look for, how to go for checkups every year, every other year, whatever is required. And now in the Haredi world, they're starting to talk about it. So these women played a very big role. I need not tell you that my heart goes out to them, and as someone from the YU world, it hurts me to think that women die because tzniut doesn't allow their leaders, their mentors, to talk about the basics of good health and healthy practice, etc. Okay. The Rebbe faces it as a chassid faces it. The Rav takes it on as a litvak. And we ended off last week talking about, on one hand, the Rav began teaching Gemara, then college, teach Torah, it will solve all problems. We've gone full cycle, where the Rav's Talmud, Rav Mordechai Willick, just a few weeks ago, stated in public, "Oy, halavai, we didn't teach the women any Torah." And by the way, a Talmud of mine, a very famous rabbi, whose son is in the Kollel for many years, so my dear Talmud said to me once, Evidently, he was having problems with the daughter. He said, Halavai, we never taught the women Gemara. All right. It's inevitable. I believe the women are going to learn, but nevertheless.
They don't have to learn on the same model.
You see, Yitzchak has affected you. You're suffering from sovereignitis. Relax. The Rebbe will get there. Alex, I'm not escaping, but give me time. I have to develop it properly. God bless what you said, but we'll get there. Now, the Rebbe, on the other hand, calling the bat matli kane rat Shabbat, you understand, the Rebbe, give them a mitzvah. So someone wrote into me, a Talmud Elliot wrote into me, maybe the Orach HaShulchan means when the girl is married, it comes back to her parents' house, she should light candles there. No, that's not the meaning. The Orach HaShulchan is Pashit Kol Benot Yisrael. He's talking about all Jewish daughters, and he makes the analogy that unlike men who don't light Shabbos candles when the father is lighting, when the mother is lighting, the daughters should always light. That means young daughters. And it's not just my interpretation of the Orach HaShulchan, but when the big machloket came out and all the litvakim were chopping off the Lubavitcher Rebbe's head, he, bracha levatala, so the few litvakim who had intellectual honesty quoted the Orach HaShulchan the way I'm quoting it. So, all right, the Rebbe took that, the Fabrenin for women's, a very fascinating concept. Imagine, and there are movies of this, videos of this. I imagine if you go on YouTube, you pick up actual movies of the Fabrenin. I know women who went there, and this is overwhelming. Hasidish, the Rebbe speaking, the warmth that comes across. Looking at an Adam Gadol, I understand that. I have to admit, I understand that. I know what it meant to me to look at the Rav, to look at Reb Maisha, to look at Reb Aaron Kotler. I know what it meant to me, so I can understand it. And I saw with my grandchildren. I told you the story when I can't go into detail. I'll cry like a baby, which is all right, but it'll take too much time. But the beauty of Israel, the miracles that are happening here. By the way, you notice these Russian kids, these two Russian students I have, they don't know, they don't appreciate. I said to them, remember what I said yesterday? I have this video, I want them to send it and pass it on. No one came to see me, no one's interested. The miracle of the rebirth of the Russian Jewish people, it's overwhelming. So on this wedding, where this girl of German origins, Moroccan origins, both sides, a father who knows nothing about Torah, a mother who's related to all the Bubbas, and she's marrying this boy whose mother was killed in the 19 bus, a Russian kid, Nof, the father, became a Messianic Chabadnik, gave up his first family. My daughter raised, was the guardian, was the court-appointed guardian as this boy grew up. And here they're getting married, B'nai Torah, beautiful, they have three children already, and Rav Atman Scheinzelf is Masada Kedush. And that's the wedding where I was wearing a blue shirt, and my wife gave me hell. How do you go in a blue shirt? You're going to have the first two bracha, dressed like a mensch. So I put on a white shirt. So I come to the wedding, and there's Rav Atman Scheinzelf with a bekesh and a blue shirt. But Rav Atman, I saw my grandchildren staring at him like, to them, to me, Rav Atman Scheinzelf. So I can understand that the Fabrenin for women. But now I want to go further, and we're going to get involved in a very interesting discussion where we're going to go into a sideshow that will make Alex very happy. And this is a recording. The Belz Rebbe comes to see the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they have a typescript, word by word, of their conversation. I believe the year is 1981. I'm quoting from the book At Alit, Otsar Sichot Me'erebi Melebavitch Tzitzal L'Nashim V'Na'arot, 2014. It's evidently talks taken from the Fabrenin for women. And the Belzer Rebbe is telling him, we just organized a high school for girls. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe tells him, it's very important, because all the governments in the Western world, and require girls to go to high school, and it's very important it be done in an organized fashion. And he tells him, you should see to it that the high school is on a level. Ah, so then the Belzer Rebbe says to him, yeah, but we didn't have this before. It's something new. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and I heard the Rebbe, by the way, in 72, he said the same thing in a Fabrengen. He had a very good sense of humor. So the Rebbe says to him, yeah, he says, the Lubavitcher Rebbe says to him, I got to be careful which Rebbe I'm talking about. He says, yes, he says, it's true. It's something new. And you're right, you can speak in terms of it's pritzot, women teaching, schools for girls, taking women out of the house. Yeah, he says to the Belzer Rebbe, you have a point. But the Lubavitcher says, times change. And he tells the following story. When the Riats, if you recall, and anyone who knows the history of Lubavitch, the history of modern times, Lubavitch were the first ones went into Morocco. They sent shluchim to Morocco to teach the Jews there Torah. And this already goes back, we're talking, going back to the 1910s, the 1920s, the Georgia, Bukhara. Then they went to Morocco, to Mamish, the Arab countries. And Chabadnikin came in, and the Rebbe says, when they came in, they organized schools. They organized schools for boys, for girls. There was a tremendous rush. I'm quoting the Rebbe as they translated into Hebrew. I'm sure they were speaking Yiddish to each other. A tremendous rush. The Chachamim, the Sfadik Chachamim, schools for girls? Who ever heard of such a thing? Pritzot. And then when they saw the type of girls that we turned out, the graduates, they realized it's time to change. And the Rebbe goes further, and he says, we actually started speaking about Tarat Mishpacha publicly in Morocco. And again, there was a tremendous rush. Tzniut, how do you speak about Tarat Mishpacha? This is a delicate matter. The girls will learn from their mothers, from their grandmothers. And ultimately, it turned out that it was a great blessing because the girls would come home with the halachot and they would find out the mothers made a mistake, the grandmothers made a mistake. Totally different when you learn with a text and with Rabbanim in an organized fashion and not in a haphazard, desolatory fashion. And I have to tell you, that's absolutely correct. With Israel, I know, with Yerushalayim, I can't talk about Rehovot, but I know that the Moetza Adatit, you have to give credit, they, if you wish, they arrange, you have a teacher for Tarat Mishpacha, women teach women, men teach men. And my daughter was a teacher for many years, my youngest daughter. And they have a course before, they're prepared, they handle it well. It's lekavod uletiferet. Very, very important. Not only that, and here's the Rebbe with a sense of humor. The Rebbe says to the Belzer, and tell me, don't we read newspapers today? Don't we publish newspapers? And the Belzer Rebbe says, oh, we started publishing in the 1870s, Machzikei Hadad. It's still the official name of the Belz newspaper, Machzikei Hadad. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe gives him good. He says, but I believe Belz began a lot before 1870. He says, who had newspapers? Who read newspapers? And the Rebbe says, how did we get our news? How did we get our news? Offendorf, outside the shul. The shul, how were the shuls built? Did you ever see shuls in Europe? They were little buildings with big courtyards around them. Those courtyards was where you got married, where the chatna, because they never held a chatna in the shul, a chatunaza. I hate to say it, it's a mundane act. It's uvda dechol. How are you allowed to have a wedding in a mountain kadoa? You're aware of this problem. The Chatam Sofer wrote a tshuva answering it, having a wedding in his shul. All right, Rav David Lifshitz wouldn't go to a wedding if he knew the wedding was in his shul. He would not go to a wedding. He will only sadeh kedushin. But what we do today when we build shuls, I remember when they dedicated the great synagogue, you make a tanai in the dedication that you should be able to have weddings there, and you can have shalashudas there, and kiddush there, and you make a tanai in the kedusha. So today we encourage weddings in synagogues, because adarabba, it adds sanctity, which people need. Today we have to stress the fact that marriage may be a mundane act, but it involves kedusha, kedushin, sanctity. It's the heart of the secret of Jewish survival. I need not tell you, Chaim Bendo, we started talking this morning about the tragedy of Friday. So as I told you, the Chatan-to-be, whose wife-to-be's father and brother were killed, Lo Aleinu Erev Shabbos, an hour before Shabbos, so he's the grandson of Shoshana Silbit, the widow of Rav Avraham Silbit, the man who built Be'er Sheva. If you don't know that name, then you know his great uncle, Rabbi Moshe Talansky, the man with the envelopes, with the dollar bills, who brought down Olmert, who saved Yerushalayim, etc. So I mentioned that Shoshana Talansky has 100 grandchildren, 100 great-grandchildren. My brother told me this yesterday, 100 great-grandchildren. So Chaim Bendo said, that's nothing. And he tells me his wife's cousin, Hirschfeld, I believe the name, 174 grandchildren. Hundreds and hundreds of great-grandchildren. And the great-grandmother knows the names of each one. So you see, Baruch Hashem, that is revenge from Hitler. That is the miracle of our rebirth. So the Rebbe says, where did they get their news? Nach Mincha, you are now, you can see it at the Shtiblach. At the Shtiblach, there's a bunch of Anglos, I call it the Parliament, meets outside. I always say if Netanyahu would come to ask us advice, we would solve all his problems. Outside the Shtiblach, Marav, there's 6-7 minyanim, but this a bunch of Anglos filled with gossip, filled wise guys, guys there with big yichas, the kids of Shulchan Aruch's great-grandson is there, Professor Jack Friedman, Chaim Waxman, the world-famous Jewish sociologist, one wise guy after another. And that's where they sat and got the news. One guy traveled to a big city. He was in Warsaw, and he came back filled with news of what's happening in the world 6 months earlier. That's how Jews got the news. Who had a newspaper? Today, who doesn't read a newspaper? So the Rebbe says, that's new, and no one objects? Allah had come and become, we shouldn't object that we're running schools and we're teaching women in an organized fashion. Then the Rebbe goes a step further, and here I want to briefly go back to the Chavis 20 years ago. When it comes to teaching women, see, we have a very basic question. And as my wife says, that's your punishment for being men. A man, where I come from, lasot b'divrei Torah, I can't sleep late. I cannot sleep late. I mean, this morning I got out of bed 4:15. I can't. I have to learn. I have to say, Birchat the Torah, I have to learn. I have no choice. V'agita b'yomam v'layla. All right. That's it. We live in the modern world. We live in the Western world. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I went to college. I went to graduate school. I mean, correct. All right. Leisure time. I do admit I look at the Yankee website every day. But my basic gestalt, you don't find me without a Sefer or Xerox pages. I'm always doing something. A woman is not obligated. She can wake up, and she wakes up. She doesn't have to worry about Kriyat Shema. she has a good life. Okay? Now, this reflects in what the heart of teaching has to be. For a man, and I refer you back to my lectures, you can pick them up, but I give you a simple example. Baruch Berlevovich, the Talmud Milchav of Reb Chaim Briska, Birchat Shmuel, Volume 1 on Kedushin, pages 38 to 42. He gets the famous question from Reb Shimon Schwab, if you're allowed to go to university. I'm a Yekka, I'm a German, I was born and raised, my parents beat the hell out of me, you have to go to university. And Reb Shimon Schwab gets an answer from Reb Baruch Be'er that university is a tragedy, it's terrible, it's horrible, it's sort of like what we spoke about yesterday with the Pigel Yaakov Weinberg. Yeah, Rav Kish had no choice who he tirits, eit lasot l'ashem heferet Torah pecha, but a Jew has to learn and learn everything. Now this is crucial. A Jew has to learn everything. A male, it's not. I once met a nice Jew in the Shtiblach. So I was learning at the time. I was finishing Shas the second time. My own learning. And I was going, I think it was in Kritut. And he looks at me, and this person's a Wayu Mustmach, a brilliant guy, older than I am. And he says to me, I would never even touch a Masechet like that. He says, what do you need Kritut? Menachat Zvachim, he says. It's hard enough for me, Nashim V'Nezikin. But yes, a Jew, a Torah Jew, has to know everything. Nothing to do whether it's practical, not practical, whether it's halacha l'maisa, not halacha l'maisa. I'm learning Yuma now. No, all of you know, 7/8 of Masechet Yuma is kachim. It has nothing to do with halacha l'maisa. The last parak deals with fasting and Yom Kippur as we know it, but you have to know it. Masechet Pesachim, how much of Pesachim is Karbonot? What does that have to do with Halacha L'maisa? Just the last perek, Avrei Pesachim, is Halacha L'maisa. All right, the first perek, a little bit the same, but with Bedikat Chametz, but otherwise it's all Kippur, Pesach, etc. With a woman, the world says a woman is not obligated to learn Torah. Absolutely false. A woman is obligated to learn Torah, but only to know how to observe her mitzvot. Anything beyond the basic understanding of mitzvot ma'asiyot is a luxury for a woman. It is not a chiyuv. It is not an obligation. And that is the big difference between a man and between a woman. Now, here's where the Rebbe is very fascinating. And what do you teach a woman? He's now talking with the Belzer Rebbe about a curriculum. So of course, in relation to a curriculum for a woman, the halacha she has to know, basic hashkafa she has to know, but what is basic hashkafa? And here he adds on that Avat Hashem and Yirat Hashem is also basic to life experience. And if that's the case, you have to teach a Chassidut. A woman may very well be obligated to learn Tanya, to learn Likutei Torah. And by the way, I have to tell you, Mayanot Yerushalayim, I have seen women come out of there who know Hasidus backwards and forwards. They can talk with Alex. I can't. Alex, they're on your level. I can't talk with you. All right, Shas and Paiskim, I can talk with you. I can bark at you. But they, mamish. Now, this is very fascinating. And here, I want to make an analogy. You can check it out in Rakaf Aharon. I don't know if it's Chelek Aleph, Chelek Bet. By the way, someone asked me about these volumes. These were all published by Shvut Ami and raised millions of dollars for Tzedakah to help spiritual absorption of former Russian Jews, formerly from the Soviet Union, or even the Soviet Union as well. So these volumes will be available when the third volume comes out. I've checked, they have enough. We'll make all three available. We'll do a book launch here with all three volumes available. Anyway, in one of the first two volumes, you'll find an article I published in the early 70s, way ahead of the crowd, on Talmud Torah L'Nashim and what women are allowed to study according to everyone. And here it's very fascinating because Rav Avram Grzynski, if you recognize the name Hashem Yikom Damo, was killed by Hitler. He was the last mashgiach of Slabatka. His Talmidim who survived and made it to Israel published a volume, I think it's called Torah Avraham, the exact source in the article, I believe it's Torah Avraham, with his Musa Shmuasin, published it here in Bnei Brak after World War II. So among his sichot, there's one about teaching women. And there, he also, just like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Machiv et hayiriyah, he broadens the curtain, the rabbinic expression. And he also says, Avat Yisrael, Yirat Hashem, Avat Hashem. All these are concepts. But he doesn't suggest Hasidic farm. It's not in his world. He suggests Mesilat Yesharim, Orchat Tzadikim, the classic Musa Svarim. So you see here the Rebbe and Rav Avram Grzynski, and I trust the Belzer Rebbe, they are discussing a curriculum for women. Their curriculum begins with the commitment that a woman is not obligated in Talmud Torah, but she's obligated the Talmud Torah she needs to know to be observant, to be pious, to be filled with ahava and yira, to understand what it means to lead a Jewish life. And this is the Rebbe, 100%. Contrast this now with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And I'll show you in a moment that on a certain level, the Rebbe does not disagree, but there's a basic contrast with the way Mori Rebbe approached this problem. The Rav's shtantz begins with the reality that men and women go to high school, go to college, go to postgraduate school, have every degree in the world today. And you know that. I think I told you, I went to visit my grandson doing research on a very high level at the Technion, the medical division with cells and all types. I mean, the equipment made to order in Germany for this type. This cost $500,000. This cost $300,000. I couldn't believe my eyes. And by the way, the Technion has no financial problems. It's not like YU. They are very highly endowed, supported. Their research is valued all over the world. In China, they use their name now. They exchange faculty in New York. So I looked around his department. They're all women working there. He's one of the few men. The head of it is a world-famous professor. All right, he's a man. And I asked my grandson, his wife is in the States now, and she's on an exchange program in Brown University in medical school. She's from Technion. She's lecturing there. She's an MD, and he's going to join her for a month. I said, who's going to take over? I said, oh, no, my colleagues. I'm going to ask the two women you met who work next to me. They're going to take over. So you see, women are working as postdoctoral research on the highest level. So the Rav felt very simply, it's not a question of obligated or not obligated. You don't want the woman to feel second rate. In this world where she's out of the ghetto, out of the kitchen, okay? She's in the big world. She has to feel that her learning is every bit as good as the secular study available to her. And when you take that approach, then of course you can understand the Rabban Maimonides or in Stern College, everything was available to women. If they want to study, hold on one second, Yitzchak, the sky is the limit. And I have to tell you, I took that approach in Machon Gold, where I had some influence on curriculum. And I told the dean, I told Gabby Cohn, who was the nicest dean I ever worked for. He was such a mensch. He's a Talmud of Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. His brother is the famous movie producer, Fini Cancini, whatever it's called. He put out many movies, world famous, won many awards. The Garden of, etc. And Arthur Cohn. He's Reb Moshe Chaim Shapiro's son-in-law. Very well to do. That's why whenever they have a volume ready to put out of the Rebbeim of Reb Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, there is no lack of money to put it out in a beautiful, beautiful edition. So I told Gabby Cohn that girls are asking, they wanted something in Rav Kook. I said, we have to have a policy here. If 10 girls want to learn something, we have to make the class available. I never want to say to girls, this is not for you. If men want, fine. We're dealing with the reality. I'm not saying they're obligated, but if a girl says, Rebbe, I have a Talmida, a very famous one, who's gone through Shas already, I think at least twice, Dina Cohn Zimmerman. Her husband's also my student, studying the Kollel. So Dina knows Kachim, she knows Tarek. She wants her. I don't say she's obligated. I'm obligated. If your wife wants to read novels and wants to watch Kveis, the honeymoon is on television, you can't say to her Bitul Torah. That's why I always said, no, then she'll slap your face. You have to go along with her. Enjoy, honey. Relax. You understand? Just make me a good kugel for Shabbos. Admit what your shortcomings are and let her enjoy her shortcomings. But you see, that's the Rub's approach. And I buy into it 100%. Now, you say to me, look what happened. This is what Rabbi Willig is relating to. Yeah, but this doesn't mean people learn Torah become up because I don't have to tell you where David Hartman learned. I know him from Lake Widget. I know him, a Talmud of Baron Cutler. Knew who would ever believe a Talmud of Baron Cutler. His last book, you know how it begins. He's Rabbi Montreal. This Kohen comes to him. Rabbi, I want to marry a Giyoret. I'll be Masada Kedushin until every Kohen who wants to marry a Giyoret or a Magreshet. I will be Masada Kedushin. Personal happiness comes before the Halacha. Well, if personal happiness comes before the Halacha, we have nothing left. We don't know. Well, we'll take a look at the Reform movement and the Conservative movement and riding to Shul on Shabbos. Personal happiness has limits. We're bound to the Halacha. It is not the Western world. It's not Isha Yashrav Ben Avi Aseh. So, yes, you're going to have some problems, but we're always going to have some problems. That's the nature of the human being. Ein tzadik v'tzar shomo yenta. There's a challenge. Uvachato b'chayim. I hope that I've raised my students with enough Torah feeling that they'll make the right decisions. But I'm not foolish enough to say, I succeeded 100%. Mori Rebbe used to say, the Navi says, v'kol banayach limudei Hashem. The Rebbe used to say, Ad biz mishich v'kumen halavai rov banayach limudei Hashem. Okay, Yitzchak, what did you want to ask?
In Maimonides, yeah. Had the girls learn Gemara.
Right.
However is, he had it set up differently.
I'm going to come to that. It's not for the reason you think. I'm going to come to it in a minute. Yeah, Alex.
Also, there's a bit of an issue there, which I often point this out when I'm encountering liberal circles, which is, I know many Bali Shuva women who went to top universities, graduate schools, all kinds of things like this, and they become very frum, and they become, you know, yeshivish or chassidish or Haredi, and they're very, very happy and enthusiastic about the type of chinuch they have in that circle, and they're very, very religious, and they're ones who are with PhDs, they're all kinds of things of that nature, and I think that there's some very big fallacies in that equation that's built into the whole problem that we have in the YU world, which is that we have imported so much a secular way of thinking into our Talmud Torah therefore we have to, because we professionalize Torah in such problematic ways, now we have to look at the model of Torah.
So what you're saying is very true, that a lot of people who have been through the world and experienced the big world and they come back and see a Haredi. I'll tell you one little story that says it all. I've said this story again over the years a few times. When I came to Israel, the biggest TV personality was, his name is blocking out, Uri Zohar, thank you. Uri Zohar, Arik Einstein's brother-in-law, or best friend, I should say. And today they're Machatanim. And he was Mr. TV, Mr. Movies, Mr. Everything. He had this program on TV, and you got to know the world he came from. Although I want to say one thing to his credit, he did not play around with women. He was loyal to his wife. This is even before he became a Torah Jew. But he was drugs, experienced a little liquor, you know, the good life, endless money. Had his program on TV. Behind him was a half-nude woman. You know, that was like the backdrop. Right, excuse me? In front of him, I remember behind him, but say that, why, you were here? You were here that early, yeah, right? You were here in the 70s. I mean, it's very limited TV, if you recall. And then suddenly, the lady is covered up. And the press went crazy. And then it was totally anti-religious, like religion should have disappeared by now. The Mapai ruled. Then, the week later, he's there with a kippah. The week later, his tzitzit are out. And the week later, he goes off TV, and he becomes Uri Zohar. So no one knew what happened here, what happened. And I have to tell you, Uri Zohar's tshuva, he wrote a book, it's very fascinating. His tshuva is very interesting, because he was married to this woman, it was his second wife, but it was a serious marriage. His first marriage ended quickly, it was, high school kids. This one was a serious marriage. And he told her he's becoming frum, and he asked her, if you want to go along with it, fine, if not, we'll divorce. And he opened up the Rambam, he showed her the Rambam, and she chose to go along with it. And you have to give credit. And his kids were already approaching teenage years. They chose to. As a matter of fact, this kid who's the least Haredi is the one born after Achereisha in Kvar Chazru B'tshuva. No one knew the story. Anyway, there was a Rabbi Zuberberg in the Old City. The Zuberberg, am I pronouncing it right? The name, the school, the Talmud Torah, the Cheder.
Zilberman.
He did the translation in England of Rashi into English that appeared in two volumes in the 1930s. That's who we're talking about. So Rabbi Zuberman lived in Shaarei Chesed. Uri Zohar, when he started asking questions, went to him, and Rabbi Zuberman said to him, I'm not going to answer any of your questions. I'm inviting you to spend the Shabbos in my house. There are many hotels nearby. You'll daven with us, you'll eat with us, and I guarantee you by the end of Shabbos all your questions will be answered, but you have to promise me you will not be in Chalal Shabbos, you'll spend the Shabbos nearby. So whatever it was, I think it was the King's Hotel, what they call the Prima today. They changed names. You go out of your mind trying to keep track. That was the closest hotel to Silverman's house. It was actually 2-3 blocks away. He spent Shabbos there. And at the end of Havdalah, he was totally committed to Torah Hashem. So they asked him, what happened? And he said, and he explained it when Rabbi Zuberman died, he eulogized him and he told the story. He said, look, where I come from, children don't talk to parents. Each one hates the other. They're fighting with the other. He says, I never saw anything like it. The father walked into the room, all the children stood up. All his questions were answered. And then he went in and he gave a famous talk. He said, spoke about a chinuch in Israel, that they gave me the key to the world, but they took away my most precious possession. Torah. Hashem. So what you're saying is very true. And I'm not going to argue with anyone who chooses that lifestyle. And I'm going to say I'm perfectly pleased and impressed and happy. I often said to my grandchildren, let me see one become a real chassid. One become a real litvak. They're all like me. They're all Tzionim Datiyim, all my descendants, 100%. They're all like me. Few people can say that. But you're absolutely right. But I want to be Melamed Zchut NYU, the Rav, Stern College, and Stern College has succeeded beyond anyone's imagination. You understand? I know when it began, and wow, take a look, it's more successful today than Yeshiva College. They're getting a certain element there. That element you can't push aside and say, you must live like this. You follow? Some will choose, fine. But we have to give them the oxygen if they wish to come into the big world, and they're saying, as these women said, I can get a PhD in Chinese literature. Why can't I study Talmud? So
be a bigger discussion. I don't want to say something and get myself in trouble, but it's so clear when you look at the program.
Alex, first of all, let
me compare them to the best students, that could, the most religious students, and.
Alex, I want to make one correction. In my class, you can say whatever you want. You will never get into trouble. We have to respect each other's thinking. But there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, but there's a lot of truth to what Yitzhanai is saying. We're dealing with a certain reality, okay? And all my daughters could learn a Daf Gemara. Did they take it further? Only my eldest daughter took it further. My youngest daughter took it sideways into Chassidut. You follow? But you got to give them, you can't, and this, the Rebbe says, when he's talking with the Belzer Rebbe, the Rebbe says, so the Belzer Rebbe, we'll come to it in a minute. Let me finish up with the curriculum, and let me make Yitzchak happy. And let me make Yitzchak more intelligent on the topic. The Belzer, the Lubavitcher Rebbe says to the Belzer, listen, he says, and when you teach girls, pick topics that they can relate to. When a boy learns, you have to teach him everything. When a girl studies, pick topics that they can relate to. Now, the Rav said this about Maimonides. In Maimonides, the average child we're getting comes from a home that is partially Torahdik, partially, don't use the word Jewish, but partially observant. Gemara can be a very boring subject. That issue has come up here in Israel time and again with the high schools. How do you liven up the curriculum? All right, Gemara can be a very boring subject. As you know, I remember when I was a Rebbe in an MTA, a Rebbe in YU in the early 60s, in the 60s, the 62 to 69. So I remember everyone used to praise me because I could liven up a Tosfot. I could make it come to life. You have to be able to attract their attention. So the Rav felt, we're teaching Gemara. We don't have to teach the Yeshiva Shemesechtot. Here we are better off teaching Moed, teaching Chulin, Kashrut, Shabbos, Yontif. They can relate to it. Brachot, exactly. And that was the Rav's concept. And I just want to tell you, I think I told this to you, but let me repeat it again in context. I had this problem when I'm being briefed by the Mossad and they're putting all this stress on me. You're going to be the first one to teach Gemara in Russia. The refusnikim want it. Now I have a real problem. I'm going to come into a room where there are going to be four or five people sitting there. I had to be limited in size because the KGB had just made a raid in December of 80. It's the same house where they made the raid. Ira Vizov, who I spoke about in class, Aye Katsin. And they have the people to, everyone there has a PhD. So what am I going to teach them? And yet, So I chose Arvei Pesachim. I said, if Rebbe began teaching in Stern College Arvei Pesachim, I can't choose a better Gemara. Because everyone knows Chametz, Matzah, Dalet Kaisers. You follow? They can relate to it. Yachatz, Afikomen. What does it mean? Ah. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe on this level is thinking exactly like the Rav. Fascinating. Yes,
I just want to say it's important to underscore the Rav's approach to curriculum had nothing to do with concession for the young women studying at Maimonides. That approach applied equally
to the boys and girls. Absolutely.
Absolutely. That was practical, that was
absolutely. Absolutely.
There wasn't a concession. We sat together.
Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. That's a good way to meet one's wife, Baruch Hashem. The problems are over. Listen, I want to teach. I'm entitled to. If Alex is entitled, I'm entitled to my opinion. In a koa, what are you doing? You have to teach Masechet Ketuvot, Kedushin, Gittin. I would have difficulty teaching that. Matzah Petach Patuach. We got to have a little tzniyus in life. At least I feel very strongly about that. There's a limit. I even today, I used to give lectures on Tarat Mishpachar in gold. Today I would never do it, because today there are women who are capable of doing it. Today, the women need women role models. The less rabbis they have teaching, the better their curriculum is, in my opinion. You have women today on a high level who can teach, who can emulate Nechama Leibovitch, Bezer Anpin, Halavai.
Thank you. I just want to say one other thing.
Excuse me, one more time.
Possibly Shilas, the women.
And Bruria didn't paskin? Come on. If the woman has knowledge, of course. If it's a difficult child, everyone has to be sent further. But if you have a teacher in the classroom and teaching Tarek Mishpacha, and she deals with some of the delicate questions of Simonim and Bedikot, etc., of others she can paskin. What a practical. And tell me, you eat in your house? Who are you, Samachan? That's the answer. It's not a Shaila. We have women who shecht, who we have Kabbalahs from Italy where women slaughtered and did the Dika on Ofat. They didn't do, they couldn't do, they did on Dakot. They couldn't do on the big animals on Gassad because physically they couldn't handle it. But to me, that's not a Shaila. But the woman has to have Yirat, has to know what she's doing, has to have Yirat Shemayim. But a kashrut, in general, we eat in homes. I've eaten in homes. I don't know what's going on. I know who the woman is. That's all I have to know.
That's not Shiloh. That's just knowing the halacha.
I understand. But that woman, what are you talking Shilohs? You're teaching the class.
He's not a rabbi.
A girl is going to ask the teacher, how many hours do you wait between meat to milk? So she can explain. A woman who knows the background, the Gemara, an hour, 6 hours, 3 hours, the Germans, etc., etc.
That's not really a Shiloh. That's just
tell me, and if the woman uses a spoon that's a Ben Yomo, she knows she has the kashrut. She's paskining for herself. She doesn't ask a Shiloh. She knows.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Those are Mefurish. Did. Those are
but I don't know what you mean when you ask a Shaila. You're teaching the girls the alphabet. But a difficult Shaila in Tarek Mishpacha, I wouldn't paskin unless I consulted a Dina Kohn. You follow me? I would not paskin the halacha. A delicate Shaila. Today we can get much better leverage. A woman knows her own body. Dina wrote an article in Tradition, I still shiver and shake, with a woman with cancer with Tarek Mishpacha. It was unbelievable. So, Baruch Hashem, Bruria Paskin LaHalacha, Halacha Kabruria, open Mishnah, open Tosefta, right or wrong. So I'm not overwhelmed if a woman has that ability. But this is part of our problem. Where do we draw the line? And what title? The title Chabad, the Shlucha. Chabad is so smart. They're so ahead of us. They solved the problem. And you should have heard the keynote speaker. Did you hear him speak about the shluchot? How powerful they are at times. And wow. Yes, who else? Jay, you want to?
I just want to return this matter of the curriculum. I think there's a more profound inference that we could draw having to do with how the Rav rejected the individual who was sort of cloaked in all the in the extrinsic, unnecessary elements of his Yiddishkeit, if I could put it that way. In other words, he wanted us to return to a genuine, authentic Shmirat Mitzvot, being steeped in the practical halacha, so that we could express our relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to, forgive me, in the yeshiva world, there's sometimes what's manifest is a preoccupation with the esoteric, with the impractical, and then it's sort of a short path, you can draw a short line to the Rav's rejection of all those external factors, whether it was the hat or the garb or the yeshivish talk and approach.
All right, what you're saying is the Rav lived, he assimilated the Western world, and yet he never left Brisk. And that's the way those of us who are close to the Rav live. The best example, which I told you many times, look at the pictures of Reb Chaim, the way Reb Chaim dressed, look at the Chafetz Chaim, that video that we found, that's unbelievable. You see, they dressed kachat ha'am. There was no rabbinic garb whatsoever. And the Rav, listen, that was his lifestyle. I don't say everyone has to live like that. A lot of people are angry at me that I dress like a slob, I walk around like a nobody, disappear into the crowd. But that's my choice. That's my privilege. The best story is the one I told you. The mid-50s, when they got the car, and the Rav got a driver's license. And the first time the Rav is out driving, he bangs up the car. The Balabatim came in. It's a true story. Balabatim, I don't know if you know it, but I know it, because I was a high school kid at the time. And we love stories like this. So the Balabatim came to the Rav and said, Rebbe, you know that you're very dear to us, very precious to us. You're the Rav HaRashi, and we don't want you to drive. God forbid, you can hurt yourself. It's not for someone who has a Rambam and a Ravid on his mind. Only an Amoritz knows how to drive well. The second request was, Rebbe, you know, the hats you wear during the week, it's not bekovedik for the rabbinate. I don't know what he's wearing, a cap, whatever. So the Rav said, on your first request, you're absolutely right. Only my wife will drive from now on. And that was absolutely correct. When they drove in on Monday mornings from Boston, she drove. And I still remember parking the Dodge. It was a black Dodge on Amsterdam Avenue. His mother lived across the street where he stayed. But he said, when it comes to the clothes I wear, I'm no different than my Zayde Reb Chaim. He didn't wear a rabbinic hat, and I don't have to wear a rabbinic hat. I can dress the way I wish. That's the gottlet of a person. All right, that was, Jay, that's the way we were raised. That's the way we lived. That's the way we raised our good, I know your family, our good children, our good grandchildren, Baruch Hashem. But you have to understand the concept today, and just give me 1 minute, I want to get back to this topic, but the concept today that has conquered, the Hasidic world has conquered all. And what we have today is, look, the world is so threatening, so difficult, live in a portable ghetto. And that will protect you from sinning. And there's a lot of truth to it. You wear a gatel when you're davening, you wear black, you wear a white shirt, you wear a black hat. Everyone knows who you are. It's very hard for you to sin. You follow? What are you going to do? Take off your beard, your payas, your gatel, but the next morning you got to go back to the shtibble. Hey, what happened? You don't have the beard, you don't have the payas. So there is something to be said for the other world. It hurts me personally that the Litvish world doesn't exist anymore. As you know full well, Hasidus is conquered. I would love that there should be a Litvish outlook, a Litvish outpost for those who need it, who think that way. But all right, Hasidus has conquered all. Look at Lakewood today. I went in Toronto. There's a shul that's the Lakewood Shul. I once opened the door on a Shabbos morning. I was staying in the Bathurst area. I opened the shul. I think it's called The Elephant. It was a saloon originally. Now it's a shul. Rav Pam's son is the Rav there. I looked in. when you, from the back, there is no way you can tell anyone apart. Until you see their faces, everyone looks exactly the same. It's mamish chassidus. All right, but chassidus is one half. They have conquered the literature world.
And I recognize
that Rakefet is a dinosaur. And I'm happy to be a dinosaur. A person has to be realistic. If it comes to a choice between Chovevei Torah or wearing a black hat and black clothes and a white shirt, I choose the black. Okay, but let me come back here. And here the Lubavitcher Rebbe is exactly like the Rav. On this level, if I wouldn't know that this is the Lubavitcher Rebbe talking, I would think it's the Rav talking. Because what happens? Rav, the Belzer Rebbe raises the issue, the whole sugya of the Gemara in Sota, Kol Hamalame Bitl Torah Ki'ilu Linda Tiflet. And I've lectured on this extensively, it's not for now. And without going into the halakhic ramifications, because you have to understand, Rashi is very clear there. Rashi's daughters were all big lamdaniyot, so Rashi had to explain the Gemara. He explained very simply that the lifestyle then was to get married at 12. You had no time to study. Women didn't go to school. Women didn't write. Women barely could read. That's why in many shuls, they had one woman who knew how to read would lead the other women. They couldn't read, and she read. She would lead them in davening in the women's section. But if a woman like that starts learning Torah, Sota, that and the Gemara and the Mishnah, that at times has chut tola, that a person can commit adultery, but they did other mitzvot, so God lets them live. If they hear that, they'll become lewd, they'll become vicious in their behavior. You know, it's learning out of context. Better don't teach them anything. So when the Belzer Rebbe issues, he raises the question, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe says to him, and this is exactly what the Rebbe said, that's not an issue today. Today, all the women go to school and they learn Tiflet. Torah comes as an antidote to the Tiflet that they're studying in high school, in college, in graduate school. It's no longer a problem. And if you take Rashi, you can understand it very well, because Rashi explains that was the lifestyle. But today, Baruch Hashem, I'm on in years, and yet I'm a youngster. In this classroom, at this moment in time, I am the youngest person here. Okay? So Baruch Hashem, we live longer. We mature later. We go to school. We learn plenty of Tiflet. But Torah is the antidote. And therefore, and then the Rebbe goes further, and he says something, I'll tie it into practical concepts from Malamed. The Rebbe says, look, you're going to teach a girl, she's learning, she's studying, and then you're going to tell her, you can't study this, you're not allowed. He says, any girl who has any intellectual curiosity will go and study it on her own. She'll go to the library. She'll find an English translation. Better she should learn from good teachers in an organized fashion filled with Yirat Shamayim. Tiflet does not apply today. And the Rebbe goes on and on. Yes, the Bell's asking, what about Mishnah? The Rebbe says, what's Mishnah? Mishnah's halacha. If she can learn halacha, she can learn Mishnah. What about Gemara? The Gemara that explains the Mishnah. She's curious, teach it to her. Don't let her feel second rate. The Rav would say exactly the same thing. And here I'll tell you, as a Rebbe in the yeshiva, when I taught at Daf and Gefet, Gemara, Perish, Rashi, Tosfot, when I was a regular Rebbe teaching at Daf. So my classes were famous. I never skipped any Agadah or any sexual Gemara. Kids, 14, 15. And the reason was very simple. I always felt that if you skip the Gemara, the kid will go and take Sansino and laugh and work it. Let the Rebbe teach him. Let the Rebbe give him a feeling. Let the Rebbe give him a breath of life, of Torah, of Yirat Shemayim, of understanding of Kedusha. And I can tell you, an Adam Gadol who used to test the kids So he comes into my class. I don't want to mention his name. You'll understand why, but you all know who he is. I write about him in Washington. And he's testing on the Psachim, and we get to the Agada, and I tell him, ich hab das nicht übergehäuft. I didn't skip it. I did the Agada too. So he started asking questions on the Agada, and I saw he hadn't looked at the Agada in years. He had to look and look, otherwise he knew everything by heart. And he was so impressed how these kids reacted. And that's very important. Why do we skip Agada? And this is a big problem today in the yeshiva world. I need not tell you, in the literature world, not the Hasidic world. The Hasidic world has an entirely different approach. Their learning is based upon, most important, what we spoke about, halacha lemaisa. Kids of 12, 13 in a Hasidic yeshiva are learning Masechet Chulin. In a literature yeshiva, if you learn Chulin, it's only when you're studying for smicha, when you're well into your 20s. And the reason is very obvious. In a literature yeshiva, you're learning Reb Chaim, Nashim, Nizik, and you got to go deeper and deeper and deeper. Chassidish yeshiva, you're learning to be a good Jew. A good Jew involves halacha l'maisa and involves covering ground. When in a literature yeshiva, how many blat gemara did you do a year? You started gittin. You did, if you were lucky, 30 blat already was considered a monumental achievement. That same year in a Hasidic yeshiva, they could have very well accomplished gittin, kedushin. All right, 1 year, 1 year. Now, I'm not taking stands. These are delicate questions. We're not going to reach a definitive answer. A lot has to do with your own intellectual disciplines and inclinations. You know, there's no black and white answer here. But I know that I had to force myself. When I came in Aliyah, I was still learning Be'ir, and then I said, you know, I'm never going to know anything. I had to force myself. You have to do an Amid a day with Rashi, Tosfos, Pesach of the Rambam. Steinsaltz is fabulous because it always gave you an overlook at some basic questions. Today, of course, Steinsaltz has a world, but I find Steinsaltz has too much. I get lost in it. But the diagrams at times are good when you have to view the Beis Hamikdash and how the Kohen Gadol walked in and when he walked this way or that way and the Homa Chloket. I never really understood it. Art Scroll, the diagrams are excellent. Today, in the new edition of Steinsaltz, the new translation in English, the diagrams are much, much better. My students are working on it. It's a much better edition. So, you see, here the Rebbe is talking, cover ground, give them background, practical. Don't skip. Don't tell them anything is a closed book to them. Unbelievable, unbelievable how on this level the Rebbe echoes the Rav. You close the book, they're going to sneak in anyway. They have intellectual curiosity. And by the way, you can ask Naomi Reagan, when she went to Beis Yaakov and they used to give out English books, pages were missing. Pages were stenciled out by a black marker. Naomi Reagan would go to the library to see the original book. And this is why I will always defend Naomi Reagan. People get angry, her novels are this or that. I say, if I would have had her education, I don't know if I'd be from today. You understand? This is exactly the Rebbe.
That's the women that have that education are from.
It depends what your IQ is, what your intellectual inclinations are. Everyone is different. But a bright person, you cannot stifle. You understand? I remember I had a student, I asked him, I think I write this in Washington, my student, long before you were born, the 60s. And he's very famous today. He's the Jonathan Pollard's lawyer in America, Jean-Jacques, and I'm his Rebbe. And I once asked him, what's the secret that we remain so close to each other so many decades? And he said to me, Rebbe, you should know, I was a very bright kid, I was in Hirsch, Center for Hirsch. So I asked questions. The teacher, the Rebbe, thundered at me, Jacques, when you know the entire Torah, you'll ask until then, shut up. He says, I came to your class. He says, I couldn't believe it. You answered every question. You never, and when you couldn't answer it, I got to do my homework. You came back and told us what you, how you researched it, what you found. He said, that brought me back to Yiddishkeit. This kid already, he told me he was eating in treif pizza. If his father wasn't looking, he didn't put on tefillin that day. And Baruch Hashem, this is the Rebbe. Then something else here with the Rebbe. Sex education. The Rebbe says it's so important to give young women, when, you know, older, he says. I would imagine he means last year of high school, third year of high school, to give them a proper sex education. And he says, yes, it's true. The Belzer Rebbe will say, we didn't do this in the old home, in the Altenheim, we didn't do it in Belz, we didn't do it in Lubavitch, right or wrong. But it's a different world today. And everyone is, the Rebbe knew what was going on. Got to remember, the Rebbe lived in France. France was the bastion of liberality, of sexual deviant behavior, talking the 1930s. The Rebbe lived there, and he was a private citizen. And he knew what was going on in the Western world. The Rav got to Boston, all right? I don't have to tell you Boston. I'll tell you what America is, what became of sex in America, what became of sex in the Western world. I mean, today, could you imagine when I was a kid growing up, there was a famous actress committed adultery. They wouldn't make a movie of her, Ingrid Bergman. The movie, no one would go to it. It would be a disgrace. Today, what men wear, adultery, schmadultery, premarital relations, etc., etc., etc. You must teach them sexual behavior, proper behavior, taret mishpacha. You have to talk about it. And this, the Rebbe and the Rav, exactly on the same wavelength. And let me go one final step where you'll see the Rebbe, b'chol devurato u'b'chol tifarato. And boy, is this halacha l'maisa today in Israel, lo aleinu. You talk about the Haredi world, if there ever is a criticism, this is it. So the Rebbe says to him, the Belzer Rebbe says, Unsetechta, uses that expression, our daughters, who the school is for, who we're teaching. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe differs with him, says, you cannot use that expression. Every Jewish girl is our daughter. And he says, just the opposite. You should have girls, shetzrichim lekarev, mendav sein brengin nenta, we have to bring them closer. They should be able to mix with the girls from the real solid homes. Each one should benefit the other. Doesn't mean that you create a mixture, but it means you influence for the better. Important for the religious girls to see girls who don't come from the same background. They're going to go out into the world. This is a reality. And very important, l'karev otam. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe makes gives him a mashal. He says, on Chag HaShvuot, we all know you have to eat meat, Simchat HaChag, Basar V'Yayin, and Minig Yisrael, we eat Chalavi. We don't mix them, we don't corrupt them, but they both have to be there. And he says, in attentive education, chas v'chalila, we should differentiate between the religious girls and the girls shetzrichim lekarev. And the Rebbe quotes the Rambam, Hilchat Tshuva, Perek Zayin, Halacha Chet, v'chet gamur hu lomer lebal tshuva, who the heck are you? You ate meat and milk together. Don't talk to me. chas v'chalila. O la'azkirem lefonav kedei levayshov. O la'azkir devarim inyanim hadomim lehem. Kedei la'azkir o mashe asah. Oh, look at those Jews in North Tel Aviv. They eat shrimp. Don't say that to a Jew who once ate shrimp. Hakol asur musa olav beklal. Honayat devarim sheziru hatorah leha. Shenema v'lo tanu ish et amito. What a powerful, powerful Rambam. And there's the Lubavitcher Rebbe giving Musa to the Belzer Rebbe. It's not right to speak unzer techta. Why do I say this is halacha l'maisa? Hashem Yirachem, what happened here? A year or two ago, we still suffer. We're a Beis Yaakov, a Slonima Hasidish Beis Yaakov, put up a fence so the girls should not see the girls from Sfatik homes who want to go to Beis Yaakov. And this is a tragedy of the Sfat, of the Haredi world. The Sina to the Eidot HaMizrach. And I'll let you in on a personal story now. It's worth telling. When I came in Aliyah, I was mixed up. I had learned in Lakewood, YU, Talmud of the Rav, Reb Meisher, Reb Aaron Kuzler, Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, Bnei Akiva. And I really didn't know what's going to happen to me in Israel. So I decided, like when I was a teenage kid, like I write about in Washington, I decided to visit all over. I went to Merkaz Harav. Wasn't totally at home there. Their animosity towards Hebrew U, general studies, not exactly my Rebbe's approach. I went to Hebron. Shabbos, snuck in, Kenderet and Yiddishaychet. And I learned a terrible word there. Es nicht mehr wie a Frank. That's like saying not more than a kike. Svartik, Frank. Frank, Frankish. Svartik, cinnamon. This the way you speak of your fellow Jews? Show me Torah mitzvah 100%? The Svartim have more women going to mikveh than our Shomrei Shabbos? That's an absolute fact. Put them down like that? Put down the Rambam, the Ravid, the Rashba, the Ran, Rabbi Yaakov, Baal Hatur? What are you doing? How do you talk like that? And this prejudice, which I saw in 69, they taught me a new word that I never knew before, don't want to repeat it again. Boy, that pushed me off. And then I had a miracle, which I write about. I was teaching in BMT, and I influenced a young man named Jay Holzer, and his father was so happy. I was evidently the first Rebbe that gave him the Shema, and he was no youngster. He was third year college. And he rewarded me by feeding me clandestine tapes of the Rav. And what those tapes did for me, I never had to leave my classroom where I sat. And until today, I'm really sitting there, and the Rav is sitting here, the Hamavin Yavin. So, terrible prejudice. I will quote once again Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, Seichet Tzadik Levracha. God only takes the best, the eldest son of Rav Avadji Yosef. And Rabbi Yaakov Yosef said publicly, there are only two elements in the Torah world where a Sephardic Jew is accepted as a full-blood brother. No, Chabad and the Tzionim Datiyim, quote, end quote. And boy, is that absolutely true. And my children are exposed. They hear people speak. My grandson just told me he was on the train with a Sephardic guy, a Frum guy, and he's telling my grandson he's Haredi, but how much he suffers. So I told my grandson, why didn't you tell him, join your world? Why does he have to suffer? But I guess his wife is a Beis Yaakov product. And once I had my blood taken at the Rehovat Turim, And the person that took it was a Svadik, former yeshiva boy. And he asked me what I do. I told him, I teach in a kollel, I'm a Rebbe, I'm a Malamed. And he started unburdening himself, how he learned in Hebron, but they always hated him, never accepted him, because he's Svardi. And I said to him, didn't accept you. What about the Rambam, the Ravid? Gave him the same line again. It hurts me to talk about it. We have a Kibbutz Goyim here. We have a miracle. Jews from so many nations, so many different opinions, so many languages. And I have so much different Torah to speak on it, but the clock is hitting. So I have a lot to give out. I want to say something else too. A word of thought to share with you. I have a Talmud. His relatives are sitting here, David Newman. So David Newman really understands my soul, and I think I understand his soul. But David Newman, and it's already a few months ago, sent me an email. He's a child of the survivors. That's the Kalava Rebbe in Cleveland. That's David Newman or his classmates when the Kalava Rebbe began a cheder in Cleveland. Kalava Rebbe, of course, lives in Israel today. Very famous Rebbe filled with Avat Yisrael. Here's a picture where the cheder was in Cleveland. And David Newman was raised, you know, in a good Torah, perhaps slightly right-wing environment. But hasn't made his peace with all the changes. L'chvod Harav Rakefet Shlita, you mentioned Chabadnik. I was born to survivors in 1949 on the shores of the USA of America and the Midwest. Survivors lived together, socialized, davened in the same shuls. I grew up with the Alter Rebbe's Lubavitch Chassidim from the old country. I went to Cheder with their children. Yes, in Cleveland there was a Hasidish Cheder. It was founded and under the Kalvala Rebbe, Harav Mendel Traub, currently of Yerushalayim. Attached are pictures from 1944 in Cleveland Heights. Not only did I learn in the house sewn in the picture, we davened there as well. These Lubavitchers and their children not dress or behave like today's Chabadnikim. Today is Chabadnikim at Siga Kumenes, Johnny Come Latelys, and hence became very overly zealous fanatics who do not know the basics in halacha. We have the same problems in the yeshiva shevel. They lack in simple knowledge of simple halachas. Thanks for listening, your virtual Talmud from the Midwest. I want to tell you, I did a lot of thinking about this email. And you know, a lot of times we rebbeim, you know, I think of the world in which I was raised. I think who should be sitting here teaching my Rebbe. And I think of the wonderful environment in which I received the Torah. I think of our Mesiras Nefesh, Koama Hashem, Zachati Lach, Chesed Noraya, Lech Teich Acharai. And it speaks to me. Habenya kiri li Ephraim yelet shashuim mi de davri brozach askeren arein akrein acharenu old nu'um Hashem. It speaks to me. And you worry about the next generation. And I've heard teachers, and maybe I'm guilty of it too, and they storm and commandover and harass the new kids. Ah, you're not going to mount everything. And look how naughty you are. And look at the changes. And I want to tell David Newman, my dear David Newman, I want to tell you as a Rebbe of Heinz teaching Torah, 57 varieties. And believe me, I've seen more than 57 varieties. You know something? We can never complain about the next generation. God has given us a magnificent people. We are here. No one else is here from thousands of years ago. We are here in dignity. We are here in Mesirat Nefesh. Problems we have, difficulties we have, questions we have, differences we have, but the underlying neshama that unites all of us. We are here. And we don't have to worry. These Chabadnikim, you're right. Tzuga Kumina, 90% of Chabad today is Tzuga Kumina. In the Kollel, I did surveys a number of years ago, more than 50% of the students were either Balei Tshuva or second generation Balei Tshuva. And take a look what we have. Difficult? Yes. But never to be depressed, always to be confident, and always to be optimistic. And I have to tell you, I've seen it in Israel. The old time Mapainikim, you got to know, the Palmach. If you weren't in the Palmach, you didn't count, right? Anu, anu, ha, Palmach. It was a whole culture. And then they're crying, our grandchildren, what have we raised? Where's their dedication? Where? All right, true. Many kids, Palmach grandparents, they're in South Florida today, Los Angeles, Cape Town. Take a look what we have. Take a look at the army we forged. Take a look at the Mesirat Nefesh. Who would ever believe that we would have so many high-ranking officers with kippot and tzitzit? Just think. I told you, that lady, Tat Aluf, Shomeret Shabbat, 100%, Wiesel. Look what we've achieved. The head of police never broke his foot. Going in today, he was supposed to go in. He should have refuah shleima. I hear that tzaddik. Skan Ramatkal, I met him. I thought I'm dealing with a shul gabbai. You know what it means? Skan Ramatkal, aluf pikud hadarom. And before that, aluf pikud hamerkaz, or the opposite order. We're here. Difficulty, slightly different clothes, but it's the same Torah, the same commitment. The same goal, the same vision. Ashreinu shezochino. That was for David Newman. Interesting that his relatives are here. Zachiti. Excuse me? Whatever he is, it's good. Mechutin, it's a close relative. You share grandchildren. Ein kleinikam. Wow. Anyone who's interested, it's about the Baruch Lichtenstein or Rav Yehuda Amital. Part of it I quoted in class yesterday. It's in modern Hebrew, so no one took it yesterday. If you don't know modern Hebrew, you're an ignoramus. Number two, old issues. Medaf Levin in Yiddish, okay. Present tense. Look at this. They're trying to mikarev people to be Zionist. Very little understanding of Torah Hashem. But interesting what they're trying to do. Present tense. See what you think of it. Interesting. I can go out of my mind here with all the references to websites, but this is fascinating. The Rebbe writing a letter to the Rav in response to the Rav's brachot for Chag HaShavuot 1980, and his addendum to the letter in the Rebbe's handwriting. Chabad, amazing how they save everything. YU Chabad Club inspires students. Fascinating. Kinas, banquet, pictures, unbelievable what's going on. Response to Charles Bronfman with his comment about Chabad and challenging the Reformed Jews. Yesh Toshim L'Shvach, Yesh Toshim L'Gnai. Interesting. Ani Doresh L'Shvach. He was throwing down the gauntlet at them. What I called it before, two copies, the most open orthodoxy of them all, which I don't think is a totally fair comment. And about the Rebbe and more information on the Rebbe and Yaakov Zerubbabel. The next class, for the first 20 minutes, it's $36,000. Dollars linked to the shekel to get in. You cannot give it away for nothing. Rakefet, the Rav, Nussan Kamenetsky on the whole issue of women singing the Smirat. What did we do today? We finished out the Rebbe and feminism. I'll make one more comment on it. And then we roll into depth on the concept of Shluchim, the seventh generation. I'm going to introduce you to a very fascinating doctorate done on the Rebbe, and we continue to open up the world, the mind, the present tense of Chabad, such an important faction in the Torah Shtans of 2016. Until we meet again in health and happiness, and I thank you all for coming. What a wonderful, wonderful, inspiring class. Until we know to look at your faces, our Rebbe reads faces, and it's inspiring to me. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.